University.
All right, so welcome once again. I am joined once again by the consequent Fry lads, William and Peter. They swapped places for some reason, but how are you doing today?
Well, fine as always.
And they wanted to talk about interesting topic when it comes to the right, quote unquote, environment or environmentalism, and specifically in the environment as it relates to the third world. Now, whenever anybody talks about the environment, of course, the specter of climate change is not that far away. And, you know, I know people, you know, who watch this channel who are ardent climate skeptics, right? And that whole debate rears its head whenever the word environment is talked about. But you guys have a slightly different angle. We're going to get to that in a moment. First of all, I'll mention again that Foundations of Shakespeare are now available on pre-order. If you send the receipt to the publisher for the course, you can get the book for 50% off as their special discount. Speaking of courses, 25% off, promo code SHORJAM. I'll play the ad in a second, but before I do, do you guys want to mention the event that you're putting on again?
Yeah, it's a nice academic event in a very clean environment in central Germany. The Karlstage, a basically German version of the WITAN event. I think your listeners are familiar with it. But if you're not, it's basically we invite speakers, interesting speakers from our sphere generally, from all over the world to have interesting talks. And especially the best part about us getting to talk with all of the other people that are not really speakers, but have usually very interesting things to say. In a nice location in central Germany this year in April. So you'll find it on Karlstage, if you're on, I think also in the show notes. And yeah, we see you there.
All right. So I'll play the SHORJAM ad and then we're going to talk about the environment.
Sure. 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 And so, sure.
SHORJAM.
Can you command a comma like Joseph Conrad?
Sure, sure,
sure, sure, sure, sure, sure, Jan.
Are you magnificent in your mastery of marginalism like Murray Rothbard?
Sure,
sure, Jan.
Are you legendary in your logical leveling of lamentable loquacity?
Sure.
Sure, Jan.
Come on down to the January sale at the Academic Agency. Promo code SHORJAM for 25% off. All this January, I got more courses than the Queen had horses.
Sure, Jan.
I got better rates than Andrew Tate's ad mates.
Sure, Jan.
I got better deals than Lizzo's had meals.
Sure.
Sure, Jan.
And so, sure, 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 and so, sure, 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 and so, sure.
All right, environmentalism, the right, the third world, take it away.
I mean, it's compared to the other topics we had the last few days, it's more of a not so serious thing and not so really concrete topic or well thing to do, but it's more a something we should really keep in the back of our heads, because one thing that happened with the Reaganite right sweeping over from America after the 80s is every form of protectionism of nature has become left-coded. And what we see a phenomenon with boomers, for example, we call them the diesel boomers, that basically are proud of having a loud and dirty diesel engine running. So it has become an inversion of what we see as traditional right-wing values of basically protecting the natural environment. And a new angle that we hope to bring in here today is that, shortly put, in order to save the environment of the world, especially in India, Africa, and whatever, we need white colonialism. I mean, Peter, you can take it from here.
Yeah, I will get into this from maybe a bit of a different angle, just to elaborate on my thought process. Because in our spheres for many years now, our spheres, I mean it in a broader sense, people are calling themselves patriots. And I started to really hate this word patriot. And you know, you have probably read them. There are those Carlyle books about the French Revolution. And in those books, the patriots are the communists. Patriot is kind of a synonymous word for communist. And just recently I read another French book, which takes place in the 1840s. And there too, the lower class communists are called patriots. And really something I see with the broader right wing, not our spheres, but let's say the right wing parties, the right wing populists and so on, is that they are really lacking of visions and they don't have great ideas. It's kind of all resentment and small thinking, very small thinking. We want to stay to
reaction ourselves. In the worst sense. Reaction in the worst sense. Yeah.
And yeah, not just reaction, but also this rejection of the world. And right wingers, they introduced, or they did not introduce it, but they started to use the term globalist as a derogatory. It's a kind of smear word. They are calling people globalists, and the globalists are doing whatever, and then they are making up rumors, or maybe it's true, I don't know. For example, that Bill Gates, the globalist, is vaccinating third worlders to sterilize them, to have population control. And then they say this as if it was a bad thing, you know, but I don't know if this is true, but if it was true, it maybe would be a good thing. So in a way, mentally, because of this all this resentment, patriotism, I kind of want to reclaim the term globalist, because, you know, you can be a patriot, you can be a nationalist or even an imperialist, but our planet is a globe. And ideally, we want to control the whole globe and not just to feel cool, but it has to be done. And this is where the environmentalism kicks in, because I would say Europeans, white people, but more specifically Europeans, they are the best stewards of the world. They are the best regarding the environment. We have the cleanest environment. It's not optimal, and we would need more environmentalism even at home. But if you look at the third world, they don't care about the environment. It's just not something that concerns them.
Best example is Rhodesia. I mean, when the British ruled them, it was a beautiful country. It still is in many parts a beautiful country. But yeah, also had clean cities. You had environmental protection, and basically hunting was limited, and you didn't try to hunt species into extinction just because, well, you couldn't control yourself. And once the British were kicked out, basically, and the locals had self-governance, so many things went down the drain. And it's not just the economic aspect of it, that basically Zimbabwe became a shithole in that sense. And it's not just to say that if you really care about protecting natural environments in the world, then you basically have to say, okay, well, then we have to enforce our standards on India, especially on other countries in the world. And you don't do it by just standing there and demanding. No, you have to yourself get strong again. And this ties into a discussion we had in the beginning of the or in the first series, is maybe it might be also an angle to get a part of the more sensible left on our side to say, well, we need strength, we need military and economic strength to basically go around the world and say, you cannot just create a feces river, it has to be clean, and we are going to do it in this way.
Now I have to say, for some reason, whenever I go back to Wales, one of my dad's favorite little hobbies is putting on YouTube and watching the most obscure random stuff from third world countries. Okay, I remember one time he was watching this African guy make a wooden wheel, like a bike with wooden wheels that he was hacking with a machete. But anyway, last time I went back, I can't remember exactly what country it was, some African country, where they were showing the river. the river was piled, like, I'm not kidding now, piled up with rubbish. And he was sitting there being like, why don't they just clean up? Like, how have they allowed it to get into this state? And I'm sure you've all seen footage like this, but it when you see it, and then they're walking around in a river full of, like, just rubbish that you'd put, you know, that should be in the bin or something, plastic bags everywhere. Oh, it's just horrible. Another one of the things that he likes to do is, I mean, it's just completely random stuff. It could be cooking or whatever, watching people go about their business in their everyday life, okay? And, you know, sometimes he'll be a Japanese guy, and the Japanese will just be pristine, clean, kind of autistic attention to detail. Then every once in a while, an Indian one will come up, and we're just sitting there being like, they haven't washed that. That's clearly just filthy. And things like that. Like, and it's just a remarkable thing to watch how some of these people carry on basic hygiene standards, basic kind of things that you would expect normal people to have just dealt with. And it's just allowed to fall into real filth. This is something I don't understand, first and foremost. I don't understand how those people can live in such a way where they just don't sort it out. This is something I can't get my head around at all. And yet the footage is all there. It's all on YouTube. And this is not like propaganda. This is just normal people with their smartphones sticking stuff up on YouTube. And you can see it with your own eyes. So there is definitely some sort of weird problem with certain parts of the world not doing basic hygiene, basic stuff. Where a lot of pushback comes from this, from the right, is that people look at what they call the climate change agenda, and they'll say, well, look, this is a control mechanism, a control grid, okay, that is basically designed to nerf the West, because they do not impose these standards on these other countries who are maximally polluters. And even Tony Blair made this argument when he said, look, what's the point of Britain killing itself over net zero when the Chinese have created more pollution in the past decade than the entire West did for the entirety of the Industrial Revolution? Like, for the past 100 years, put it together, the carbon output from China was bigger. Okay. So that is where that argument is at the moment. Okay. It's like, well, at the moment, environmental protections and so on seem to be a nerf to the West, as all of these other places are kind of coming up to speed and industrializing. But these are two slightly different issues, right?
Those are completely different issues.
Yeah, because let's talk about this. Yeah,
climate change, and I don't really want to talk about climate change because I have a probably different position on this than most of the right, but climate change is all about carbon dioxide and maybe methane in the atmosphere. And those two chemicals, they are not dirty in a way. I mean, if climate change is real, and I personally think that the mainstream theories at large are real, that this is a real problem, but this is not pollution in that sense. Those are natural gases that just lead to climate change, or maybe lead not to climate change, depending on what you believe. But pollution really is something completely different. The rubbish in the rivers in Africa and India does not influence climate change in any way, not even in the mainstream way. This is just dirt. This is harmful chemicals. It's harmful to the animals, to the plants, and even to humans. And especially the rubbish in the rivers, this is a problem not just for them, because somebody could say, maybe a patriot whose event horizon only includes his own country could say, well, I don't care if they live in the rubbish. It's their life, not mine. But the plastic, it gets into the sea, it becomes microplastic, it gets eaten by the fish, and so it ends up in our food chain as well, or it might flow through the sea and end up on our beaches. So it is our problem as well. And I would say polluting the sea with plastic or with other chemicals, this is an act of aggression. And in a real world where Europe still knows its power, knows its place in the world, this would be a reason for war, or for let's say maybe a nuclear attack on India or something like this, because this I really can't stand this. It cannot be that they pollute
the seas and pollute our food. Your river is dirty and we're going to invade you if you don't fucking clean it up. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, this should be done.
What Donald Trump should be doing, instead of threatening people over nonsense issues,
yes. I mean, didn't the British do exactly this in India, where they had like started a war or fought a war basically to stop the Indians burning their widows or something? I don't know exact details of it, but it's basically enforcing your clearly superior moral standard onto a onto others. Or the conquistadores in South America that basically stopped the human sacrifice. I mean, it's maybe I'm just living in a different century, but why should we do it again?
The trouble with selling this to the left is that leftists have a way of, I bet you anything, if you talk to a leftist, they'd find a way of going back round and blaming the West for the dirty river. Because in their worldview, these people have no agency for some reason. In fact, they have a weirdly colonial mindset.
Yes, where in a way they're just kind of like
powerless subject who can't do anything, you know.
And this is true, but this does not mean that we, or in a way, it does mean that we are at fault that they are polluting the rivers, because we introduced them to the technology of creating plastics and other materials. So in a way, it's our fault. They are producing the plastic, but they don't have rubbish removal. They don't have recycling or whatever. And the leftist probably would say, yeah, they do this because they are poor and they lack the institution of rubbish recycling, but they just don't care. And I think this is something where racism, I'm using the term in a value-free, neutral way, where racism will be introduced to the West at large, because back in the days, you know, when you were small or even earlier, all the third worlders, they were kind of mystical creatures. We only heard stories about them and they were romanticized. But now we see them in our countries and we see how they behave, because they even pollute our countries. It's not that the reason why India and Africa are polluted is because they don't have rubbish bins, because even when they have rubbish bins in Europe, they still throw it just on the ground. And I think,
I mean, in this country, yeah, there has been an ongoing issue in Birmingham, the second biggest city in England, in the UK, where Birmingham Council have been on strike for ages, or they ran out of money or something. So rubbish has been piling up in Birmingham. I don't know if they sorted it out now, but it was a massive story for all of last year that there was all this rubbish. And it's like, well, then it's not a million miles away from them but being like, well, who actually lives in Birmingham now? And it's like, oh, right, okay, so funny. And I remember I was listening to the radio, as I often do in my car, which is permanently stuck on LBC, where there was a problem where the residents of Lambeth, and if you know anything about Lambeth, it's an area of London where there's a lot of recent arrivals and also a historic population that is, you know, not white British, I'll put it that way, where they were having trouble getting those people to do their recycling. So the council decided they were just going to, where there's like three or four different bins, they're just going to have one big receptacle to encourage people just to put it in there. And they're going to sort everything out on the other side, because the local residents aren't doing it, basically. So they gave in and just were like, right, we can't get them to do it themselves, so we're going to have to do it on the other end. Those are two actual examples in Britain of what you guys are talking about.
I mean, it's, I think the best indicator of someone being actually white and not is if you have a internal desire to have things ordered and cleanly. It seems to be something inherent, because you can drop Brits or Germans or French into the jungle and it's going to be clean, no matter the circumstances. And I mean, what else can we do?
I would like to push back on this racism in the name of sensible center-leftism. I would say the Japanese are a clean people. I would say that...
they are white, fact, yeah.
I've been to Isfahan in Tehran. It's absolutely spotless there. Tehran less so. Tehran is a big industrial kind of city, but Isfahan, where it is spotless there, absolutely spotless, clean river. Yeah.
I mean,
you know, unspoiled.
Both examples are examples of A or S tier civilizations, and I mean. The Iranian history is really, really long. They were the first real big empire in that sense. So they are a serious people in that sense. As also the Japanese and other some other Asians. The thing is, maybe we could just call them S-tier civilizations because they are super clean or something. But there is a distinct difference.
In the interests of fairness, I also want to say that at a spotless place that I've been, Dubai, you say what you want about it, it's pretty soulless. It was clean. Oman, I went to once, absolutely spotless. When I say spotless, you have a white floor. You can almost see your face in it, right? So there are places that maintain good hygiene levels that aren't white. And I'm just saying that to satisfy my new left-wing friends.
I mean, especially in the new rich Arabic countries, you have an elite that actually cares about it because it's kind of they understand that it's a prestige thing, and they have to use drastic measures to keep their population in line. So if you litter there are heavy fines, there's sometimes even beating, which you don't really need in, for example, Japan. You don't need the state enforcing it. The people enforce it themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really believe that third worlders, and let's say the colored in general, and in this term I am including Slavs, somehow many of them, they lack the ability to comprehend the consequences on their action on the environment. And we don't just see this with physical pollution, with plastic and chemicals. But for example, coming back to the smartphone topic we talked about, we also see this with this acoustical pollution. The third worlders, they will just in public make smartphone noises or telephone on speakerphone or video calls and doing noise pollution. And we call this acoustical conquest of space. So they are lacking this sense of their own presence in the world. Somehow they don't recognize the influence of their actions on other people and the world. And this leads to them littering everywhere because they just cannot comprehend it, that somehow this is damaging somebody. And of course, they don't have an innate desire for cleanness and hygiene. They really don't care. I mean, there are those videos you see on Twitter about the Indian, in some Indian village, the festival where they throw around with cow dung and smear it in their faces and so on. What kind of people do this? This would just be disgusting for an European. I mean, so I really think there are differences here.
This is one of the things, you know, obviously in this country, there was the British Empire and so on, but it came with a whole set of social codes, politeness, you know, basic British politeness. But if you think about what those social standards were, and, you know, there's been some attempt, American-led, it must be said, to try to stigmatize, okay, this polite British politeness as snootiness in some way, right? But it's not. If you think about what British standards of politeness were, it always started with consideration of other people, And it strikes me that this has degenerated even among Western populations as time has gone on. I think people are less considerate of others now than they would have been 50 years ago, 100 years ago. And all of these other things, because basically what you're talking about with littering and with pollution and, you know, dump, like, you know, somebody's like dumped a trolley, you know, they've stolen a trolley from a supermarket and just dumped it on the side of the road, shit like this, you know, or they've dumped the fridge or something. This sort of stuff is downstream of lack of consideration for other people, which is downstream of like basic social standards of politeness, I would argue. But anyway.
Yeah, I think there's a really deep truth in there. And for example, when I came to Britain a couple of times, and especially the first time, I was kind of disappointed because in my mind I had like little England, you know, I know I'm a hopeless romantic in that sense, but I wanted to see like the Shire in that sense. And I was really disappointed of seeing it. Basically, it just looks like everywhere else nowadays. And of course, there are some parts left, but it's really hard to find. And if you're a Brit and you know places I really should visit, please let me know, because I want to have distinct European nations in that sense. And I, even as a German, after all of those wars we fought, it really hurts my heart to see how punished Britain is right now. But you know, that's a different topic. I think the not consideration of how others might feel or react to your actions is one of the main things that so-called radicalized me, because I had to use for university a lot of train service, and Peter, you as well, and it really serves as a red pill in the sense that you lose all of the niceties you grow up with, saying like, oh, you know, noble savage, not even that, just like, oh, they're just different and maybe we can learn. Years and years of experiences of that really teach you one thing, that there are innate differences and they're not just learned. I think the only positive I can really think of the mass migration we are currently seeing or experiencing is that you have large swaths of especially young guys that grow up experiencing the true differences and cannot be lied to by the old comfortable lies anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I see the thing is that I do think that some aspect of it is socialization, okay? Because, I mean, again, I'm just trying to do, I do think that, I mean, I hate to say this, but I think you can have a degeneration of standards even among the native populations. You know, in some, especially in poorer parts of some parts of the country, you see Western youths behaving in these bad ways as well. You know, so some part of it has to be cultural to maintain those standards. Some part of it has to be. You can't just say, oh, yeah, well, you know, it's obviously some of one and some of the other, but there is a way of, you know, setting incentives as such to get people to behave in different ways. And, you know, there are some people who come to the country, Indians, for example, right, who, you know, it depends on what sort of school they go to and so on, but they can basically behave in a way that's acceptable, right, to maintain various different standards. They can, they're capable of it if pushed in the right way. The trouble is that some populations need more than just socialization. They need, as you mentioned with some of the Arabic examples, they may need a bigger stick, to, you know, or bigger kind of like, look, if you throw that, you're going to have your, you know, it's going to be a jail sentence or something like that to make them listen. Otherwise, they think they can, because there's a mindset of like, oh, well, I can get away with it, nobody will find out type thing among certain types of people. And if the West has been guilty of anything, it is expecting these people who come from all these different parts of the world to maintain a standard that was in many ways set up through custom rather than hard law or through force, just through habit and social things. And of course, they're not going to get that. But then, of course, because of human rights and all the rest of it, you can't then say, well, to the police, all right, well, you've got to crack down on this population because they're throwing rubbish everywhere. Then, you know, then it would be an equality issue or something. So there is a definite issue with this, I would argue. Yeah.
Yeah, there even was this very good tweet, I think it was by Scrump or maybe by Evelyn, that equality under the law in a multicultural or multiracial society means that you are treated as a 60 IQ Somali in your own country. And I really don't want this, because I don't want to live in a country where you get beaten up for the smallest offenses. But if this is the only way we can get them to behave, then we will have to have this. And this really is also why I oppose equality under the law. And maybe to get back to the broader picture, and this is all very futuristic and not realistic on a short term scale, but I really think, and this also was said by Eric Prince in some podcast, the third worlders, they don't really need to live in white countries, but what they really desire is white governance, white institutions. And of course, we know that institutions are somehow linked to biology, and you cannot just top down introduce white institutions in a non-white country. But I think the world would really be better off if Europeans ran the third world, or maybe just on the highest level. But if we would control the third world, especially India and Africa, and prevent all this environmental pollution, and it would benefit us because there would be no pollution and we could extract resources more efficiently. But it really would also benefit them, because there are places in Africa, sometimes I watch those YouTube videos about environmental damage in Africa. There is a place in Africa where all the old computers and electronic devices are shipped to, and they are just thrown there on the ground. So this is, imagine a landscape that is just gray and black because everything is old computers and old electronic devices.
Like Wall-E. Do you remember that?
Yeah, it really looks like that in real life. And the people there, they are burning them down to burn down the plastic and so on, and to melt down the copper and then take out the copper of those computers, and they die with 20 years because they get some sort of cancer from the poisonous gases.
You don't think the China? I mean, because the other geopolitical question is, if you know, if the West doesn't do this, or if the Western countries, America, Europe, etc., don't try to enforce these standards and don't kind of go this way, the Chinese will basically end up controlling lots of these third world places. Do you think the Chinese would not bother with the pollution? You know, they're not great on these sorts of questions, pollution and environmentalism. They're pretty bad themselves.
I mean, we
see it already with the huge, for example, fishing fleets. Chile has a huge problem with that, where you have a huge fleets of thousands of individual vessels just sail up right to the exclusive economic zone of Chile, for example, or other countries, and then they all turn off their transponders and go over to the waters and fish a complete section of huge vast of ocean completely empty of fish, and then just leave back to China, and not just from a legal perspective, this is pretty hard. I mean, it is really damaging the whole. I mean, as a nation, what do you do with that? You have a foreign power that just sends in plausible deniability fleet, robs you of your food resources, one of the most important resources you can have for your population, and it just leaves and says, "Oh, it wasn't us. We had no transponder on." You know, there's just no care for the future, because do this 20 years and you have basically fished empty your whole oceans. You need decades to repopulate them. It's not just something that, like, it's like a forest needs regrowth time. And
irresponsible. It's irresponsible, is what I mean.
It's irresponsible, yeah. And we see the same happening with Chinese operations in Africa. And I mean, to get a little bit unserious here, but I would say, okay, France, you can take over Africa. Britain gets the Far East, and Germany can have Central or Eastern Europe, and then we just bring back order and clean environments. You know, then we have a new balance of power.
How do left-wing environmentalists deal, like left-wing climate change activists and so on, deal with this reality that we're talking about, though? How do they actually deal with it? How do they ever address it, or do they just turn a blind eye, or like what do they do? Because they're the people who should be really concerned about this, right?
Yeah, I ask a couple of them, basically, sometimes covertly, sometimes more overtly, these exact questions about India. And there are two types of responses I usually get. One of them is, yes, but it's actually the West's fault because we just dump our trash there. There's a really serious argument there that, yes, all of this trash is basically just the West's fault because we dump it there.
This is just a lie. This is not true.
And the second one is, yeah, but maybe we just need some NGO work, usually it results in, that just builds the institutions for them. And then they're just going to, we educate them, and then it's okay. They have no serious response to it.
Because they believe all humans are equal. They believe if you have some NGO woman lecturing them on environmentalism, they will somehow understand, but this is not how it works. And the solution would be, and I know that this is not realistic, to recolonialize the third world and introduce Western rulership there. And this would have other benefits as well, because it would be a great project, something that people would cheer for, something that would reintroduce optimism. And yeah, especially jobs. This is a point I want to make. We have a strong overproduction of elites, especially in humanities. You know, we have all those gender studies, women and so on. But they could really be put to a good use in Africa, because spreading feminism in Africa and in India would actually benefit the world. You know, so we could send our overproduced elites down there. They would have job opportunities. They would have high status there. So it would be a win-win situation for everybody.
And the ultimate benefit is that if you actually bring some of these places up, you make them nice, you make them not third world, they'll all go home.
Yep. Yeah. Win-win.
Anyway, it's nice to dream sometimes. Okay. you guys just mention your event again, and then we'll get out of here.
All right. If you want to talk about similar interesting topics far, far, far away from anywhere else, you can come to the Karlstage or to the Basket Weavers, or in Germany, the Kaffeehausrunden, and meet up with interesting people with interesting stories. And we will have a great time. See you there.
I'll just remind people, 25% off all courses with Shorjan. And I'll see you all next time. Bye, everyone. Don't pollute. Don't litter. Pick that up. It's bad for the environment. If you like this video, be sure to like and subscribe. You can join the channel for thousands of hours of past shows in the archive and hundreds of videos. If you have any questions, you can leave a super chat or a super thanks, and I'll be sure to pick it up during my weekly office hours, which run every Tuesday afternoon. I also provide courses at the Academic Agency, which I encourage people to buy. Thousands of students now have taken the Trivium to improve their skills in writing, logic, and rhetoric. Just 3 of many courses available. Buy it now. But most importantly of all, friends, get out.